Welcome to a special edition of Cross Currents from KLW News, produced with students from Mills College in Oakland. I'm Holly Kernan. Yesterday we heard about the history of Skyline High School in Oakland, which was originally created in 1961 to serve the mostly white students living in the hills. The NAACP and activists fought to open the city's newest academic gem to other students across Oakland. And now Skyline serves students from throughout the city.
Skyline is a good school because it's filled with a lot of diversity.
Well, it's like a really pretty campus. It's just like the students make it dirty.
Rowdy.
Skyline is diverse.
I was really going to say the same thing.
Diverse but united.
Today, Skyline has one of the most diverse school populations in California, with about 34% Latino students, 33% African American, 20% Asian American, and nearly 10% white. Most students commute to Skyline, so it's essentially an urban school in the most suburban part of the city. And as we'll hear today, the school is changing. One of the main forces behind much of the change at Skyline is Vin Trinh. He's been principal for 2 years now.
We love Mr. Trinh to where we painted the rock on the senior lawn. In Trinh we trust because Mr. Trinh is, he helps everyone.
Former Skyline student Narisha Cooper isn't the only one who has high praise for this veteran Oakland administrator.
He advocates for his students, no matter who the students are.
He's a tireless worker. I mean, for one thing, you cannot help but respect that. The fact that he cares is everything.
Many parents and teachers alike applaud Trinh for the work he's done as principal over the past few years. He started as an assistant principal and counselor for the senior class and quickly proved himself as an advocate for any student trying to improve academically. KLW's Kyungjin Lee recently hung out with Vin Trinh to find out the secrets of his success.
Let's go, that's warning bell, let's move.
Between classes, the five-minute passing periods at Skyline High are a little chaotic. Teachers, counselors, and guards herd the teens to their classes.
Byron, let's go. Anthony, come on.
Principal Vin Trinh hustles along with the other adults. His salt-and-pepper hair belies his youthful face. He's not imposing, but students respond immediately to his presence. A few take time to hug him as they dash off to class. We walk towards Trinh's office. He stops to show me the students' improvements on a reading aptitude test.
This is something we're pretty proud of. Last year, 47% of our students made one or more year growth.
Trinh's office is tidy. Gifts from former students line a wall, along with photos of the graduation classes he's organized over the past 4 years. Trinh says his team tries to normalize things as much as possible, but there isn't a typical day here.
Like, for example, we just prevented a possible fight that could happen right after lunch.
But things have changed a lot since his first visit to Skyline.
Kids were out during class time. There was a lack of adult presence. Kids are on the cell phone. Kids are in areas where they're unsupervised. You got trash here and there.
He attributes some of the disorganization to years of unstable leadership.
My first graduating class, my first year, went through 4 different principals. That's just wild. How can you go through 4 different principals by the time you graduate? That's just a lot.
And it was obvious from the first day of school.
Some kids would sit in the auditorium while they were trying to get classes, and that would go on for a week or so. I think that happened 2 years in a row.
Wander Boyd is co-chair of a group called Concerned Parents of African American Students.
Unfortunately, that sets the tone for the entire school year, and you're always playing catch up.
Boyd formed the group 20 years ago to ensure Black and Latino students had equal access to honors classes. She's also a parent of 4 Skyline graduates.
The parents that I talk with, they were concerned about what kind of education will my child get because they don't have a permanent teacher. How can this substitute for 6 weeks give a grade and then have the permanent teacher come in and discount it?
This instability damaged the school's reputation among students and parents. Trinh says Skyline required a huge cultural shift, a tall order for a school of 1,900 students and 86 faculty. He says he started by using positive reinforcement and instituting consequences for bad behavior. But ultimately, change was about something even more simple.
I mean, it's just setting up expectations. I think one of the things about students and human in general If you set the expectation, they'll meet it. If you set it high, they'll meet it. But if you set it low, they'll meet the low expectation.
His approach is working. The year before he started, almost one-third of the student body dropped out of school. Last year, that rate went down to 10%, and Trin is working to bring it down even more this year. Students and teachers also say the school is much more stable. Partly, that's because the administration is responding to the violence many students face in and out of school. They have trained counseling staff and a restorative justice program. There's also a mobile breakfast cart, so kids who are late to class can stay healthy and focused.
You guys take your scans, please, which are right here.
Jeff Rapson is administering a practice AP test for his senior English class. He's taught at Skyline for 9 years and says previous administrations were more top-down. But he says Trin's leadership style welcomes staff input.
I definitely appreciate that, and I think generally all the teachers here feel like if they have something to contribute, their contribution is valued, and there's a lot more buy-in by the staff.
He made himself a part of the family before just trying to put his foot down.
Narisha Cooper was a sophomore at Skyline when Trin first came in. She says he took the time to get to know each student and show genuine care.
It's kind of similar to where, like, you know, if your mom has, like, a new boyfriend, like, he can't just come over to your house and start yelling at you. He has to build a rapport first. You guys have to build a relationship before he tries to discipline. And that's what Mr. Trin did. Like, he came in and a lot of people saw him as a father figure and, like, you know, a very positive influence on their life.
Cooper sought Trin out for guidance, even though he wasn't her assigned counselor. She wasn't doing well and was determined to turn her grades around.
And so I told Mr. Trin, like, I want to make up some credits. I got C's in these classes. That's not going to cut it.
She's now a freshman at UC Berkeley and says the workload is challenging, but she's trying to emulate Trin's work ethic.
Mr. Trin does not let stress be an excuse to not do what you have to get done. And I think that that's something that I really got from him, and I really took that to heart.
So right now it's 3:05, the bell just rang. So in 5 minutes, this entire, like 90% of this campus is going to be cleared in 5 minutes. You just watch.
When school lets out, Trin stands on the side of the long incline road that leads up to campus. Almost 24 AC Transit buses line up here to pick up hundreds of students.
Hi, Mr. Trin, favorite student. My name is Romani Traylor. I go to Skyline High School. I'm in ninth grade, favorite student here. Right, Mr. Trin, so yeah.
Yes, you are.
See?
As the last bus takes off, the chaos of the school day is now over. Parents and teachers are grateful that Trin is the stable presence through all of it. In Oakland, I'm Kyungjin Lee for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. As we just heard in that piece, Skyline's administration is trying to implement restorative justice on campus, in part because of historic discrimination within the Oakland School District, as Sarah O'Neill reports.
Ladies, let's go, please. Walk and talk. Thank you.
Sonia Black is walking through the halls, trying to get the last few kids to class.
Hey, why aren't you in class?
Black is in charge of discipline and attendance for 9th and 12th graders at Skyline. She's been at the school for 2 years, and this year, they're trying something new, restorative justice.
So the whole idea of restorative justice, though, is, right, how can we make the situation right so you don't have to come up and see me anymore? We want to try to, again, like, have a conversation about what's going on and how we can resolve this so that the student is in the classroom learning and the teacher is able to teach.
One of Black's approaches is to engage students in dialogue.
We basically use these 5 questions right here, these restorative justice questions.
She's pointing to a sheet of paper with questions like, what happened? What have you thought about since? And what do you think needs to be done to make things as right as possible? Questions that are designed to get students to reflect on their actions. It's a huge shift from the traditional way discipline has worked at Skyline. You cut class, you go to detention. You get into a fight, you get suspended. But now, cutting class might not lead to detention. Now they're trying to understand why you'd cut class in the first place. And they want you to help decide what the consequences should be.
Walk slowly, she can't step on you. Let's go! Gentlemen, let's go!
Let's go, ladies!
Lunch just ended and a security guard is after some of the stragglers. If they don't get moving, they're going to be late for fifth period class.
Let's go!
There are a total of 6 security guards at Skyline. Sam Tran is one of them.
Would you say you have like a good relationship with the students?
Oh yeah, I got a good relationship with, I would say 98% of the kids up on the campus. That's what I'm mainly here for. Make sure everybody's safe, everybody's happy. Kids are doing what they're supposed to do. Kids that are not doing what they're supposed to do, I'll educate them and hopefully they'll walk the right path and do the right thing.
Sonia Black hopes to incorporate the guards into this new restorative justice approach.
Because they have a lot of power on this campus, and a lot of the kids do look at them and look at them in a positive way. You know, so rather than them bringing 2 kids up here or who got into a verbal fight, they could maybe have a conversation right there with these 2 kids.
But change comes gradually, and many students aren't aware of the new philosophy. A lot of them say discipline seems arbitrary. Security is hard on students who are tardy, but then they let some pretty egregious things go, according to Carolina, a student who didn't want to give her last name.
Like the other day, I have this friend who was selling and smoking weed in front of the security guard, and he didn't do nothing. He was just there. Some to, like, avoid the fatigue of taking them to the office, doing all the paperwork and everything, they just ignore it. Just to, like, let it go so they won't have to do all that paperwork and stuff.
Another student, Paula, says she feels like security singles her out.
And, like, I always have people come up to me like, oh, are you a BB, like a gang, the Border Brothers? And I'm over here like, no, like, why? And then they're like, because you look like one.
But what's most frustrating to these students is the punishments. Students say they get sent home from school for minor infractions, which just gets them farther behind in their work. Alex, who is a sophomore, says that's counterproductive. He'd rather see school officials take a different approach.
Like, to try to talk to him and stuff before I do anything else, like give him like the opportunity. Because if they go home, they're not going to really do anything but just like miss days and not learn. So,
restorative justice is only in its first year at Skyline, and already you can see some progress. Recently, students trashed a teacher's classroom when she wasn't there. Today, Sonia Black is meeting with some of the instigators. We'll call this ninth grader Thomas.
I need you just to own up some things or to explain some things to me, because that is definitely going to determine what our next steps are in terms of if there's a consequence, what the consequence is going to be, why did you do it? In fact, why did you pull the posters off the wall?
I don't know. Like, the first step, I should go apologize to her, like, face-to-face. I can go do that. And, like, just for, like, not taking responsibility in the classroom and, like, calling an administrator or something to prevent that from happening.
She's practicing the restorative justice philosophy. After Thomas admits to the damage he caused and then reflects on what he did, she says,
okay, I like the way most of that sounds.
Next, they discuss possible consequences.
Step one is you're going to write your letter of apology, and then we'll figure out when you can speak to Ms. Jones.
Okay.
Number two, you are getting suspended.
Thomas will still be suspended. They decided the damage was so extensive, there needed to be a strong consequence. But part of his suspension will be spending a Saturday beautifying the campus so he won't miss critical schoolwork.
Okay. Anything else? You can go out that way.
This approach to discipline is time-consuming, and not everyone on campus is on board with it.
It's very hard because people have different priorities and different ways of approaching whatever the problems are on our campus.
Black says changing the culture of a school can be difficult, especially when there are nearly 2,000 students to account for.
Some people are just straight up, you're smoking pot on this campus, it's illegal, you should be arrested. We need to figure out why this kid's smoking pot up on our campus. And maybe there has to be a consequence, but let's see if we can figure out what the root of the problem is first, you know, and talk to this kid and figure out what kind of support we can give them.
Restorative justice is starting to be used in public schools around the country. Oakland Unified is one of the first school districts to actually implement it. And after the first year of trying it at Skyline, there's still a lot more work to be done. Next year, the school will get its own coordinator and more support for mediation on campus. and by 2018, they expect to have made the transition to restorative justice complete. For Cross Currents, I'm Sara O'Neill.
You're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents, produced with student reporters from Mills College in Oakland. I'm Holly Kernan. As we just heard, Sonia Black is working to change the culture of discipline at Skyline. Some teachers oppose those efforts, but others are supportive, like history teacher Dave Orfel.
I've never been interested in what you did wrong and how I'm going to punish you so that you will like suffer and never ever do that again. My attitude has always been like, you know, you broke it, fix it. You messed it up, clean it up, right? So when that, what I do suddenly got the name restorative justice, I'm like, great, we're calling what I do restorative justice now. I'm in. Like, I'm in, no problem.
He supports many radical reforms, including rethinking the approach to teaching, which he discussed in a 2012 TED Talk.
So what if a Jewish person turned into a vampire? Corinne asked me one day when he should have been working on his essay. But I said, I don't know, what are you talking about, Kieran? He said, well, would a Jewish vampire be afraid of a Star of David like regular vampires are afraid of a cross? So I guess the big question is, what do you think the Jewish vampire would do?
By making students discover an answer for themselves, Orfel says, they're able to get into a much more meaningful conversation than if he'd just given an answer straight out. Elizabeth Welsh has this profile of one dynamic teacher.
All this week, work on your rough draft. Rough draft, rough draft, rough draft. Next week is what?
Dave Orfel has been teaching history at Skyline for 7 years.
Remember, if you're shooting for the A, you're looking for four quotes in the paragraph. Every quote, you got to explain what it says, translate it into plain English, and why does it matter to the argument or the point you're making in that paragraph. Got it? On your marks, get set, go.
According to Orfel, history should be accessible. His class is based on primary source documents or first-person accounts of historical events. He's glad that education policy has moved away from a rigid curriculum. He criticizes the old approach as too linear and too narrowly focused on a single narrative.
The story of colonialism is always taught from one point of view, right? That white people have, you know, went forth from Europe and America and conquered. Now, whether you think that's like manifest destiny and making the world more civilized, or whether you think like, you know, white people hella suck, it doesn't matter. The white people are the subjects of the sentence, and the rest of the world is the direct objects of the sentence.
Here in sophomore world history class, Orfel does it differently. He asks his students to challenge that traditional narrative and look at history from multiple perspectives. For his students, most of whom are Black and Latino, this can be empowering. It lets them see themselves or versions of themselves as being the actors in the story of history.
So today, just like yesterday, take one of those same matter organizers, turn it into the second of your body paragraphs for this essay.
Here in room 67, each student is working on an essay. They get to choose the topic.
My name is Daniel Leslie. I'm in 10th grade. This is world history class. Right now I'm working on color coding my notes and organizing them into different sections. I'm learning about labor and property for rural societies.
Daniel is focusing on three areas: Central Europe, Southeast Asia, and Southwestern Africa.
All right, guys, before you get to work, look up on the screen for a couple minutes. Here's your calendar, keep you up to date. So this week,
Mr. Orfel came to Skyline in 2007, at a time when the curriculum was being revised. During his first year at the school, he took part in the redesign of the history program.
We decided, since we were revamping the AP program, that what we really wanted was we wanted a freshman history program that would prepare the kids for the AP program so that more kids would go to the AP program.
Skyline teachers were concerned about low enrollment and lack of diversity in their advanced placement history courses. That's why they each piloted a new class, like world history, where today the students seem to be enjoying themselves. Today's class starts with music as the kids get seated. The room is loud and interactive. Students are talking about their essay projects and their lives, but work is getting done. Daniel is studying inheritance laws in 16th and 17th century Vietnam. He's reading a primary source called Le Code.
Reading about how property is divided among families is where I started. Nowadays, it'll go to the immediate children of the parents. It goes to the grandchildren of the children.
Students don't often engage with this type of primary source document until they're in college. But at Skyline, they do it in their first years of high school, and many go on to AP classes. So many, in fact, that Orful says the school had to add more.
We had to double the number. We went from 2 to 4 classes of AP World History the very next year because so many kids not only felt they were able to do it and self-selected to do AP History. Like, not only were they qualified to do it, but they felt like they could do it, which was huge. I mean, it was fantastic.
And a lot of these new AP students are Black and Latino. That's a change from a few years ago when white and Asian students went on to the AP program in much higher numbers than their Black and Latino peers.
It's sort of how you wind up getting segregation in the middle of an unsegregated public school is the white and Asian kids who got a lot of support at home or like a lot of expectations to succeed get funneled into the AP program and the Black and Brown kids don't.
Yeah. See, what happened was I applied myself in an AP class that I was not fully prepared for, I would say. And so I'm making up for it now because I do want to graduate and I do want to present myself as a student who actually tried to fix the mistakes that I've made.
That's senior Brendan DeBose. He testified in a recent lawsuit against the Oakland Unified School District. Brendan and other Black students who said they had been systematically denied quality classes and were mistreated by teachers brought suit against the district.
Basically being told that you wouldn't make it in life, things like that, that you're not really supposed to tell a child, and basically just being failed even if you attempt to do the work, or if you ask for help, you're not receiving the help that you need. That's never helpful, and that's happened to a lot of students that I know and myself.
Despite these obstacles, Brandon is now on track to graduate with all his college requirements. He plans to attend the University of Arizona, where he dreams of playing football and studying kinesiology. But first, he has to finish his paper for Mr. Orful's class.
My essay is about European encounters with Africans, Native Americans, and Japan.
Skyline's world history classes encourage students to look at historical events and their own lives in new ways. Not far away, in a redwood-shaded courtyard, art murals read, "No past, no self," and "Knowledge is power, knowledge is strength." Students at Skyline have a strong ally and resource in a teacher who is passionate about their success. They're learning their past so they can write the stories of their futures. In Oakland, I'm Elizabeth Welsh for Cross Currents.
This year's graduating senior class includes 2 students who were awarded the Bill Gates Millennium Scholarship. Only 1,000 students nationwide qualify for it. This is Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. It's a special edition produced with students from Mills College in Oakland and focused on telling stories from Skyline High School, which is working to transform the culture on campus in a lot of different ways, including trying to make sure no one falls through the cracks. One group on campus is doing that successfully with historically marginalized students, those with Asperger's. Kids come to Skyline from all over the city in order to access the Asperger's Inclusion Program. Megan Sussman has that story. And a note to our listeners, we're only using first names in this story to protect student privacy.
As I walk into the classroom of the Asperger Inclusion Program, it's pretty quiet, except for the tapping of keyboards. But the computers aren't actually students' favorite part of school.
My favorite part of high school is probably being around my friends.
Well, my favorite part of high school will be hanging out with my friends and like learning new things.
Dylan's a junior and Marcel's a freshman. Their responses surprise me. When I think of people who have mild forms of autism, sociability is not the first thing that comes to mind.
We create a community in which they can be whoever they are, and it's really valued.
Courtney Gamora is the Asperger Inclusion Coordinating Teacher at Skyline.
You know, really, to look at the students when they often first come into the program, very shut down, very calcified by life, right, you know? And slowly to see that literally chip away, melt away, melt away. And what you find inside is like this insane gem. You know, it's like, oh my God, they're so cool. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, we dig it. We dig it.
That idea of inclusion is central to this program.
It started from a group of parents who were noticing that their child had peer level or higher cognitive ability, but we're having challenges in school. It's an interesting story.
Gamora says in the late 90s, a small group of parents noticed that their children, while performing well academically, struggled to make friends. And in the classroom, they acted out. The parents approached the elementary school's administration, which did some testing and found
they had the characteristics that fit the autism, that high-functioning autism, which is Asperger's syndrome, right? Mm-hmm. So such was born the Asperger Inclusion Program.
That small group grew as more kids were diagnosed, and they brought the program with them to middle school, and then to Skyline.
There were no other programs before it, so Skyline is the first high school here in the district that had the Asperger Inclusion Program.
Here's how it works. Every day, students meet in the classroom for a single period. A team of support staff helps with coursework, as well as any behavioral issues. And if the students need extra help or if they're feeling overwhelmed, they can drop in any time throughout the day. But even with all this support, for some students, school's still a struggle.
I don't have any favorite part in high school.
Jamari is a sophomore. I found him outside, playing with a tennis ball.
It's just, I really don't like school.
Like
I never
it?
Did, no.
This is what Gamora is battling within the classroom. Academically gifted kids that have struggled with the isolation of Asperger's. But Gamora's confident it won't always be this way. Every Sunday, a group of graduates from the Asperger Inclusion Program meets in her apartment building.
Yeah, here's the thing. Every time I play PS3 games, these people don't want to play it.
They're in the movie room in Gamora's complex, joking around. Often they bring college projects to show the rest of the group. But right now, they're talking about their experiences back in high school. Jacob graduated in 2012.
Apparently the Asperger Program pretty much gave me somewhere to go. Like a hub that I can go to do work, hang out with friends.
Tayshawn graduated in 2009.
My favorite part was basically just joking around with everyone there. Even the teachers were really fun to be around. There were certain teachers that, you know, we all had inside jokes with.
Wesley tells me about his favorite part of high school.
This is probably my first class. It was a science class. We got to meet real nice people, and that's where I met the very first friend who I've now known since high school. We still get along very well.
I ask Arnold what his favorite part of high school was. His arms sweep the room, and he points to Niat, a friend since middle school.
They're all around me. The people here. Especially that one.
Gamora's program is transforming these students, who once felt so isolated and misunderstood, into a close circle of friends.
I think around what, like junior year, I started to somewhat stop having tantrums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, pretty amazing.
Yeah, Josh and me were always there to help you out.
Yes, you were.
Gamora says the friendships they create are perhaps the greatest things her students take away from the program.
I feel emotional even just talking about that. It's huge for them.
I went into Gamora's classroom, unsure of what to expect. But as I continue to talk to her, the current students, and the graduates, I realize something really special is happening at Skyline. Every single graduate I talk to is enrolled in some kind of college program, following the passions that surfaced in high school. Through her ongoing support, these young adults are creating friendships and a place for themselves in the world. For Cross Currents, I'm Megan Sussman.
I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents from KLW News, produced with students from Mills College in Oakland. We're telling stories from Oakland's Skyline High School. The Asperger Inclusion Program is one thing that draws students to the school. Another is the arts. The school offers drama, dance, instrumental and vocal music, and theater. As Aaliyah Yates reports, it's not your ordinary arts program. Extraordinary things are happening within Skyline's walls.
It's 7:30 in the morning at Skyline High, and the halls are humming with activity. Kids are talking and slamming lockers. It's loud, but one building's playing a different tune. When you walk into Mr. Tolliver's music room, you're transported to the world of the arts. It's loud, it's passionate, it's musical, and it's understaffed.
Here's the whole song.
He is teaching too many classes, in my opinion.
Band president and teacher's assistant Kyla Weich is familiar with his heavy course load. Mr. Tolliver teaches not one, not two, but six classes. That's one jazz band, one orchestra, one marching band, and three guitar classes. Did I mention he's also an advisor for the Black Student Union?
I forgot that. I'm the performing arts chair.
Yep, and he does it all. There's no jazz director and then an orchestra director. It's all Mr. Tolliver. He does it all.
That's because he has to do it all. At Skyline, many elective classes, like the music and drama program, are either underfunded or not funded at all.
The only thing that is paid for from any part of this school is my salary. Everything else that you see is all us generated.
By us generated, he means he and the students raise money to keep the music program going. Competition fees, uniforms, instrument repairs, the works.
We go on a lot of just quick little gigs and stuff to raise money. The jazz band does a lot of that too. They do Yoshis every year. And that brings in a lot of our revenue.
They do whatever it takes to raise money. Raffles, bake sales, benefit concerts. But the majority comes from the gigs they perform for various events.
It could be anywhere from a person's party to the mayor hosting something and they just want the Skyline Jazz Band to come out.
I just booked a gig for the mayor 10 minutes ago.
Now, the revenue varies from each event. It can range from a set $500 for a three-hour gig or a couple hundred from the event and donations from partygoers. Altogether, they raise about $3,500 a year. Not only does the program struggle with funding, it's also understaffed.
Let's do majors and let's go up chromatic.
I'm basically the first chair of the entire orchestra. When the teacher's not here, I conduct everybody, make sure everybody knows what to do.
Chelsea and Kayla say they've essentially become teachers. Tolliver has taught his students to, well, teach students.
And it's not just me. It's like me, the co-drum majors. They do it all. They pick out music. They conduct rehearsals.
Taking on such responsibility is meaningful for these Skyline students. The skills they've gained extend beyond music.
It's a lot different than being at a music program anywhere else.
Senior Chelsea Burgess says Mr. Tolliver is a big reason why she stayed in the music program.
He's not going to just leave you hanging if you don't know something. He's going to take the time out of his day to, you know, give you private lessons and teach you.
And for Mr. Tolliver, teaching is his true calling.
I love the fact of, you know, I get to call myself a music educator. I think if you teach music, really teach music, not notes, not just rhythms, but if you teach music, they will have an education.
It can also allow him, as a teacher, to connect with the students on a deeper level. And that, at the end of the day, is what music is all about.
Teaching music is such an exchange of spirit. And, you know, you're teaching people how to learn. You're giving what you have. At the same time, you're trying to see what your student has and helping them to tap into that so that they can teach themselves and hopefully equally and excel you as a performer or as a teacher and as an artist.
Mr. Tolliver is a loving teacher, but he's still tough. because what he cares about is that these students succeed in the long run.
You're going to hate me, and in 10 years, you're going to love me. I don't need it. You hate me, just good. Hate me in class.
And students like Juliana know that even when he's hard on her, it's all from the heart.
You know, he pushes us a lot, very, very strongly, like in the direction that he thinks that we need to go. But it's a loving push.
But these skills, these leadership roles, that will stay with them.
Each student gets the opportunity to make their mark. You know, my mark was the color guard. Chelsea's mark is orchestra. You know, even after she leaves, you know, she can say I was the concert mistress. You know, Kayla's mark is jazz band and different things that she's done.
So a true education would be discovering what's inside of a person and helping them to develop that. Their gifts, their innate gifts and talents and passions.
Tolliver's been teaching for more than 2 decades, 6 of them at Skyline. He's decided that this will be his last year here. He's moving to Claremont Middle School, where he hopes he can make his mark on an even younger generation. But don't be sad. Just like his students, Mr. Vincent Fitzgerald Tolliver has left his mark at Skyline. For Cross Currents, I'm Aaliyah Renee Yates.
That's it for today's special edition of Cross Currents from KALW News, produced with Mills College in Oakland. Our reporters for this series are Aaron Clark, Maddie Fowler, Emma Ishii, Sara O'Neill, Mary Ruiz, Megan Sussman, Nika Tahan, Elizabeth Welsh, and Aaliyah Yates from Mills College. Also, special thanks to KALW's Kyung Jin Lee. This program was engineered by Chris Hoff. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.